Hello and welcome to Fade Out, the podcast that examines the final films of Hollywood's brightest lights. Proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Rob Kelly. Our subject this month is actor Thelma Ritter. Born on Valentine's Day 1902, Ritter started acting at the age of 11 in high school plays and stock companies. She went on to get formal acting training, but then decided to put her nascent career on hold to raise her two children with her husband, Joseph Moran, whom she married in 1927. After resuming her career, she made her uncredited film debut for director George Seton in the 1947 holiday classic Miracle on 34th Street. She appeared uncredited in her next two films, called Northside 777 and A Letter to Three Wives, the latter directed by Joseph L. Mankiewicz, an important connection. The next year, Mankiewicz cast Ritter in All About Eve, for which she earned an Oscar nomination, her first of six across her career. After Eve, Ritter became one of the most dependable character actors in Hollywood, appearing in films like The Mating Season, The Model and the Marriage Broker, With a Song in My Heart, Titanic, Pick Up on South Street, Rear Window, The Proud and the Profane, A Hole in the Head, Pillow Talk, The Misfits, The Birdman of Alcatraz, How the West Was Won, A New Kind of Love, and The Incident. She ably supported film legends like Jimmy Stewart, Kirk Douglas, Doris Day, Richard Widmark, Marilyn Monroe, Clark Gable, Frank Sinatra, Jerry Lewis, Debbie Reynolds, and Burt Lancaster. She reteamed with director Seton for an unbilled cameo in the 1968 comedy What's So Bad About Feeling Good, starring George Peppard and Mary Tyler Moore, which turned out to be her final film when Ritter died of a heart attack the next year. Here with me to discuss What's So Bad About Feeling Good and the career of Thelma Ritter is author of the upcoming book, Thelma Ritter, Hollywood's Favorite New Yorker, Christy Putnam. Hi, Christy.
Hi, Rob. How's it going?
I am so thrilled to have you on the show. I need to set the stage for everybody. When I started doing this show, and I told you this off air a little while ago, Christy, when I started this show, God, 6 years ago at this point, I had a few core people in Hollywood whose careers I wanted to talk about. I was like, that's why I'm doing the show, is to talk about this person. And Thelma Ritter was at the top of the list because I discovered her, of course, via Rear Window, and it was an age before the internet. And so I felt like, was I the only person that really loved this person? Like, I felt, you know, I felt like she was sort of like this weird person that nobody, not realizing she'd been nominated for six Oscars and stuff. But I've always loved her, and I've always wanted to talk about her. But I thought, well, who else is out there that's going to want to talk about Thelma Ritter with me on a podcast, right? So I just sort of put that off to the side, thinking, well, maybe one day someone will volunteer to talk about Thelma Ritter. Who, maybe not, but maybe. And then you and I crossed paths, and I saw that you're writing a book about Thelma Ritter. And I thought to myself, well, there's only one. I have to get Christy on the show here. I had no plan. I mean, you might have been like, who are you, weirdo? I don't want to talk to you. But I mean, I was like, who else better to talk about Thelma Ritter than someone writing a book about her? So I am just so excited to be able to finally talk about one of my favorite actors of all time. And I'm just so happy that we're going to get a chance to do this.
Well, I'm really excited to be here with you, too. I've been spending a lot of time on the history of Thelma Ritter, and I enjoy talking about her. And I feel really privileged to be here with you because you've done a lot of great interviews, like last week's Juliet Prowse. It was her niece, correct?
Yes, her niece, her namesake, yes,
her niece,
yeah.
Named Juliet Prowse. So that was really interesting because, you know, Thelma was in a movie with Juliet Prowse.
She certainly was. So, well, let's, before we even get to any of the movies, and as I already listed in the intro, there were so many great ones, but like, we have to talk about the book a little bit. I mean, how did you become a fan of Thelma Ritter? Do you remember the first film you saw her in and went,
oh yeah, wow. Oh yes. I remember the first, yes. In my earlier years, I had been ill, and so I had spent a lot of time at home, so I got to watch TV, and I remember the first movie I saw was A Letter to Three Wives, and I just thought she was adorable, and I can remember watching that movie and wondering, who is that lady talking? What did she do? I got into the actual plot of the film, but what made it so interesting, of course, were the character actors and actresses. And so Connie Gilchrist is in that, And Thelma Ritter has a couple of cute scenes in there with Connie Gilchrist, who eventually was in Auntie Mame with Rosalind Russell. So, that was the first real movie I can remember. And then I liked her so much in that film because she reminded me of my mother and my aunts.
Yeah.
And even though Thelma Ritter was from, Queens, New York, the Bronx, and that area, and my mother and my aunts were all from down south of Texas, y'all. They just had that same attitude about life, telling it like it is, not putting up with any nonsense from anybody. They're the Greek chorus, they're the Shakespearean fool. And so that Greek chorus, when you're growing up with lots of aunts and a mother, and they're always, looking out for you, that it's a Greek chorus. And so that's pretty much who she played off and on, was the Greek chorus.
That's something that it occurred to me as I started to see her in other movies. Now you mentioned she's, to me, she is like one of the great character actors of all time. Like just one of the premier in terms of how many great movies she was in, how great she was in all of them. I mentioned she got nominated six times for an Oscar. She never won, but nominated six times. And of course, the hallmark of being a character actor is that you're a chameleon. You're going from thing to thing and you're changing. You're not a movie star that has a kind of persona. Nevertheless, in most of her movies, she is kind of playing a similar type, like this sort of no bullshit person, right? Who kind of comes
Right.
into the scene, cuts through what the main people are kind of worried about, and kind of gets out. And I thought that's kind of interesting, is that she's a character actor, but yet she's kind of Thelma Ritter across all of those movies. It's kind of
Right.
very singular.
Well, and two, I talked to her son Tony back in 2013, and I asked him, I said, was she like these characters? Did she tell it like it? Like it is. And he goes, she always told it like it was. So, it was great to chat with him. And then there are a couple of good stories from him about his mom. And I'm lucky enough to be in contact with some of her grandchildren. And, it's just been such a journey. I mean, I started really working on it back in 2015, 2016. I
Wow.
couldn't find anything, And then all of a sudden, I was looking at the websites, on the internet, trying to find something, anything. And all of a sudden, this notice popped up that explained that the Academy Library, Margaret Herrick, had acquired Thelma Ritter's archives.
Oh.
And so I was lucky enough to get in there and start seeing some of the things that were in those archives. The Academy Library was very helpful. And I also knew that there had been a man who had been working on a biography of Thelma Ritter back in the 80s. And I had seen an ad in the newspaper on newspapers.com. They're not paying me to promote them or anything, but I had seen an ad where this man was looking for anyone who had any current contact with Thelma Ritter or her family or knew anything about her. So I knew somebody had been out there trying to do that. And through some of my connections, some of my friends that I made at the Turner Classic Film Festival beginning in 2010, I found that eventually I got in touch with this man who had been working on her biography. And he gave me a lot of this research that he had.
Wow.
I was very lucky because it was a series of events. Because I had met a friend of mine who's a PR gal named Kelly Kitchens. And she introduced me to one of her friends named Jeff Gordon, who was a classic film aficionado and had a vast collection of memorabilia. And he got me in touch with a man named Roger Blunk, who was a film historian. He worked at, I believe, is HBO and Cinemax, and he was kind of their research expert. Because of that series of connections, the late Roger Blunk got me in touch with a man named Jan Stewart, who had been working on her original biography, and he couldn't get a publisher. And so about 2020, he mailed me everything he had. And I had to go back and redo everything I'd done because it changed the trajectory of what I had been working on.
How so?
It had to do with how her career started
Okay.
in the 20s. And with all that information that he had given me, I had to go back and reorganize her experiences with her film career, because then I got into more of the archives at the Margaret Herrick, and that changed some of the information that I got from that box of material from Jan Stewart.
Wow. I mean, as someone who has done a bunch of audio commentaries for Blu-rays and stuff like that, and I use newspapers.com again, and it's not a sponsor, but it really is the backbone of any sort of film history research that you want to do. It's a little terrifying how much of that is pure luck, right? Is stumbling
It
onto
was, it was,
this
it
thing and
was.
this person leads you to this. It really is a little terrifying. You're like, man, had I not seen this random listing somewhere, I would not have been met to this person who took me to this person who took you that. I mean, that's just amazing, right? That you were able to see
Well,
this
I just
thing.
think she's on the other side and she wanted this book done. That's what I think.
We have no reason to think otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, I can remember being absolutely, I was in the Margaret Herrick Library, and I was going through these files, and I ran across a certificate. I live in Texas. Evidently, excuse me. Governor of Texas was in a film that Thelma Ritter was in called, oh, it was with Jane Wyman and Charlton Heston. And gosh, I'm just drawing a total blank.
Oh, Lucy Gallant. Lucy Gallant, right?
Thank you. That's
Yeah.
it. And I opened up this file, and there's a certificate making Thelma Ritter an honorary Texan because Governor Shivers was in the film, and he gave a lot of these certificates out to some of the principals in the film. And I looked down this certificate, and it was my birthday, September 8th.
It's fate. You were fated to write this book. Absolutely.
It scared me so much. I mean, I was just going, ah! And you just don't do that in the library.
One of the things that when I was watching a lot of her other movies for purposes of this episode, which was which was a pleasure because I love her, and so it was like, well, now I have a reason to watch all these other films I haven't seen. But it occurred to me as I was watching them that I was like, I've never heard her just be Thelma Ritter. I've never, you know what I mean? Like, I never really. So I went on YouTube and I tried to find some interviews, and there weren't a lot. Now, of course, she got into movies, basically before television even existed. So there wouldn't necessarily be a whole lot. And she passed away pretty young. So, I can't be that surprised that there wasn't that much. But there was a Jack Paar interview that she did, and she seems a little uncomfortable. I don't know. I could be wrong about that. Maybe I'm reading into that, but she doesn't seem totally at ease talking, just being sort of being Thelma Ritter on stage, even though she seems to have quite a rapport with Jack Paar. When you were going through the research, was she a particularly private person, or that did she retain a lot of memorabilia? Did she seem to like really want to archive her career? I had that same question for Juliet Prowse when we did the episode about her aunt, which was, how much stuff did she carry with her about her career? Did Thelma Ritter seemingly have a
Well,
sentimental value to a lot of that stuff?
either she did, I think that it was either she or her husband that filed away all of these letters she sent back home from when she would be working out in LA.
Did she seem terribly from these letters? Did she seem terribly like starstruck by all that? Not starstruck, that's not the right term, but like she seems so down to earth in all of these movies that it's sort of a little hard. Like, was she enamored of the Hollywood sort of lifestyle? I mean, you know, was she's like hanging out with, I mean, she, as I mentioned in the intro, I mean, she was in movies with all of the giant legends of a certain period of Hollywood. Was she, did she see herself as part of that? Or was she, did she regard herself as kind of a working actor that just went home and took care of her kids and, you know, had a life and then just also happened to just be in movies?
Well, she was very excited about being able to work in film. And so she was also enamored of certain people, but she wasn't put off by being with, you know, these major celebrities like Bette Davis or, you know, Frank Sinatra. She felt right at home. But she did have certain favorites. She really enjoyed working with Rock Hudson and Doris Day and Pillow Talk. She liked Frank, but she wasn't too fond of the fact that he would only do one take, et cetera, things like that, what he's known for. And I think that she also had a friendship with Hedy Lamarr. She wasn't in a film with Hedy Lamarr, but
No.
Hedy Lamarr just adored her and would came into her dressing room and saw how shabby it was and kind of redecorated it, put new curtains up and things like that. And so she had fun with Hedy Lamarr. She was friends with everybody she ran into. And something that I ran across that I thought was so interesting, a lot of the actors that she was in stock theater in the 1920s, several of them came out to LA to make a living, and they had a reunion in the 1950s out there in LA. And I think there's a possibility that she might have met Hedda Hopper back in the 1920s when Hedda was working the theater rounds in New York. And so Hedda Hopper was pretty good to Thelma. She would always try to throw in a story for
What stories were there to write about Thelma Ritter? Like, I could imagine you're writing about Joan Crawford and Bette
Oh,
Davis because
well,
there was a lot
she,
of
yeah,
salacious stuff. But what was Thelma Ritter doing that would generate gossip stories?
she would tell Hedda these kind of little off the cuff things like her son Tony loved different kinds of animals, and I think he had some lizards and geckos. And she was talking about something that happened on a trip, and all the geckos or the lizards or whatever escaped. And I think that was in one of Hedda's stories. I'm sure I'm messing up the scenario there, but it was this really interesting little thing, little bitty snippets of things, just to kind of keep her name in the papers.
That's, I love that the gossip story is a kind of innocuous family thing about Liz. Like, it's nothing seedy or anything like that. It's just kind of
Yeah,
silly. Like, that's great.
and when a lot of that research material that was given to Mr. Jan Stewart that he sent my way, Thelma's daughter Monica gave it to him, but when she gave it to him, she said, "There is no mommy dearest here."
That's good. That's I'm happy to hear. I'm very happy to hear that, right? That's great. That's a good thing to know. That did her children like have a, I don't know, not appreciation. That's not the right word either, but like did her children want to carry that banner after she died? Again, she died, you know, relatively young. Did they kind of, were they eager to discuss their mother's career many so many
It, you
decades
know,
later?
I think the son was, I think the daughter was kind of really wish she'd had more time to spend with her mom while she's growing up. It just seemed to
Okay.
me that way. Her son and his daughter and his son both worked out at Fox, I believe, and I can't remember exactly what all they had done, but but there were three generations of the family that worked for Fox.
Oh, man, I just That's
Yeah.
so cool.
It
That's just
is.
so cool.
Yes.
Oh man. So
And
well.
her grandchildren have been very helpful telling stories, and grandson has shared some photos. So there's just a lot of reverence for Thelma and the family.
That's great. That's just absolutely wonderful. So the book is done and it'll be out, what, 2026? Is that the plan? 2027? Is that the plan?
I hope maybe by the end of the year. Right now the manuscript's in. I'm still working on photos and captions.
Okay.
But we'll see.
Okay. Well,
It's all up to University Press of Mississippi.
I absolutely cannot wait to get my hands on that. I'm going to just pour into that because I'm just so excited to learn more about her, as I've had even a greater appreciation for her, having seen so many of her movies now for this episode. I really want to learn about her life and what she thought about being, hobnobbing with all these amazing people, working with all
Oh,
these
she
amazing
loved it.
directors.
She loved it.
Oh,
I mean,
that's great.
she would be out in LA and she'd be out there, by herself. She stayed at the Garden of Allah until it closed down. And that she'd be out there by herself and she'd get invited to parties. She would spend Thanksgiving with Barbara Stanwyck. I mean, it was just always invited to parties. And she also, there was one Fox executive who tried to pick her up at a party. She wrote home to her husband. She said, "That Democratic I ain't."
I'd love what's interesting. The guy was like, Thelma Ritter, that's who I'm going after. Thelma Ritter.
Well,
Interesting.
I mean,
Okay.
come on, those Fox executives were not that great.
That's kind of amazing. Well, like I said, I am so excited for the book. I cannot. I wish it was coming out sooner. I would so. I'm dying to tear into it and read it and learn about her. So, congratulations on it. You've been working on it forever. That's
Yeah,
just, oh
yeah.
man.
Well, because I had to work. This is like a just a labor of love, and I can't wait to be completely done with it.
I'm sure working on something for more than 10 years, for Pete's sakes. Good
Well,
Lord.
she's got such a great life arc. I mean, she was talented at a very young age. She started performing really, I think they said at the age of 8, but I think she was probably performing and churches and things like Masonic lodges before then. And then she, was in a lot of productions in junior high and high school. And then she went to American Academy.
Right.
And then she was doing stock theater.
Right. Ah,
She's the
so
regular Macy's Stock Theater Company kind of gal.
So, well, let's talk about some of her films. I mean, we can't cover them all and do them all justice because there are so many great ones. But we can bop around here a little bit. So, which one would like? Where would you want to start? Which one would you want to talk about? I know which one is the one that set the mold for me with her, which is Rear Window. But we could talk about that a little bit later. But like, of any of the ones, which one do you
Well,
want to
I
talk
mean,
about?
I'm just absolutely amazed how it all started for her because George Seton wrote
Right.
the screenplay for Miracle on 34th Street, but she and her husband had actually lived close to George's wife, Phyllis Lawton Seton, who was actually the first female mayor of what, Beverly Hills?
Oh,
I
wow.
didn't know. And so she knew George Seton back in the 20s.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And she also knew Harriet Hilliard at that time, who became Harriet Nelson. She was good friends with Ozzie and Harriet. And so she started out, George Seton had her in Miracle on 34th Street because
Right.
he thought she'd be good luck. And she kind of was.
She's really funny in it. She only really has like the one actually like two scenes, right? About the where to get the expensive present, and the San Edmund Gwen is like, "Well, you can go to the other department store and get it cheaper." And she's like, "Oh," and of course the department store is the last thing that they want their Santa to be saying. So yeah, she's memorable in a small role. And as I mentioned in the intro, her final film is also directed by George Seton, which makes her one of the very, very few actors whose first film and last film is directed by the same person. That's pretty unusual. I mean, I don't think she planned.
Yeah, and he also did Proud and Profane.
Right, and he also did The Proud and the Profane. Well,
Yeah,
let's talk about Proud and the Profane, because that's one of those movies that I had never seen. It's got William Holden and Deborah Carr, and I thought, wow,
the mustache. Oh, God.
I'm like, how have I never seen this movie, right? Because I'm like, that seems like I love William Holden, I like Deborah Carr, like what the hell? And then I watched it, and I'm like, all right, it's not that great. The relationship between the two of them, William Holden is it's a wartime kind of romance, and William Holden is married, but he has an affair with Deborah Carr, and yada yada yada. And it's okay, but and I'm really not saying this just because we're here to talk about Thelma Ritter, but to me, she's by far the best thing in it. She's this nurse who's kind of cutting corners and has learned to work the system of supply and all these things of the army chains of command to get stuff for the boys. And she's, checking crates and to me, every scene that she's in, like the stuff with William Holden with Deborah Carr is fine, a little purplish in terms of the melodrama, but then you kind of have her and she, like I said earlier, kind of cuts through all that. So she's, in my opinion, the best thing in that movie.
Yes, and at the time they were filming what the Virgin Islands, I believe, and there were like two hurricanes, and the lights went out in the hotel, and she would get kind of put out with some of the tourists, kind of gawking at her, and but her son was actually played one of the Marines in the movie,
Oh, I did
Tony.
not know that. Okay.
Now Tony was in there, and but I thought, and she had really great rapport with Deborah Carr. And I have an interview or a letter that she had written talking about how wonderful it was to work with Thelma.
Oh, that's great. That's
Yeah.
great. Oh, I love
Yeah.
hearing stuff like that. That's fantastic.
But
Yeah,
I mean,
she's.
it too, thinking about the film, The Proud and the Profane came out after From Here to Eternity. And so I think they were trying to kind of, get kind of the same kind of vibe going. But I just can't handle that mustache on William Holden.
It's
Sorry. Oh,
yeah,
man. Yeah.
again, like I liked it, but it's just one of those kind of just went, all right, you two just all right already,
Well,
like
I think it kind of helped his nasty character. I
yeah,
think,
he's a
normally
real
they have a mustache.
he's it's it's like, all right, well, you're cheating on your wife, well, stop doing that or whatever, but no, I thought, yeah, I thought Thelma was really terrific, and again, a very Thelma Ritter-esque part. So, all right, I mentioned Rear Window, and
Okay.
that was the one where I discovered her. And I mean, Rear Window is not only my favorite Hitchcock movie, it's one of my top 20 movies of all time. I've seen it
On
hundreds of
to, yeah,
times at this
my
point.
favorite.
And I was stunned to learn that she's been nominated 6 times for Oscars, never wins, but not even nominated for Rear Window. That stunned me because she is in a movie that's, ostensibly sort of a two-hander between Jimmy Stewart and Grace Kelly, and the dynamic of their relationship as Jimmy's, trying to figure out this murder. Thelma Ritter just comes in, and for a movie that's already a masterpiece, she comes in and elevates it even further. Every scene, she's so funny. She has such energy. She is giving Jimmy Stewart what for. She is so magnificent in Rear Window that I'm disappointed that she never worked with Hitchcock again. I don't know what other movie he would have done that would have fit her, but it's a shame that they never did. I mean, I know she did an episode of his TV show, but she never did another one of his films, which is too bad because boy, she is just tremendous in Rear Window.
She is tremendous in Rear Window. And for me, what I see is that I see this struggle when she's in that in a scene when it's just her and Jimmy Stewart. He's really doing everything he can to keep in that scene and move it, the way he uses his eyes. And she's the coming along and throwing off these lines. And he's, grimacing and all this. And I feel like it's just kind of like, to me, I see a struggle of titans there in that one scene. I do. And then another point that, when I was reviewing and writing about the film, I mean, look closely. Edith Head did the clothes for that. And Thelma Ritter had been dressed by Edith Head in several movies. And she was friends with Edith and would go swimming at Edith's house. And I kept going, I wonder if she did anything special for Thelma Ritter in this film, because she made Grace Kelly look fabulous.
Oh, Grace, unbelievable. I mean, helped
Right.
genetics helped get Grace
Oh,
Kelly there,
yeah.
but yeah, the costumes in that movie are unreal.
But there's a brown dress that she wears, and you can see if you look closely, it's a brown dress and it's got these little white points in it, but they're band-aids. They're little white band-aids on her dress. And I thought Edith Head was paying attention to her part, you know, because she's a nurse. And I look at that brown dress, you look closely, you can see these little white band-aids. They're not polka dots.
It's marvelous. It's just every time you know she's coming in, you're kind of just get you get livened up because she's going to be funny. And she gets the last line in the movie. She
Get the
gets the
last
last
line
line
in
of
the
dialogue in the
movie.
whole movie. I don't want any part of
I don't want,
her.
that's right. I mean, you think about, yeah. And I was lucky enough to, is it John Michael Hayes's daughter introduced the film, introduced Rear Window down at the Museum of Fine Arts in Houston.
Oh,
And
wow.
it was really interesting to hear her talk about how, you know, her, what her dad's process was. And you think about the last line in the movie, and Hitch gave it to her, you know?
It's that I just never tire of that movie. I still laugh at it. I just love everything about it. And you know, a lot of times in screenwriting, when you've got your hero on whatever journey they're on, whether it's literal, and they're literally going from place to place, or in Jimmy Stewart's case, he's not going anywhere. He's trapped, but he's going on this journey of thinking there's a murder that's going on. And when movies bring in another character to tell the main character, stop going on this thing that you're doing because what you're doing is wrong or you're incorrect, whatever. We, as an audience, I found like you don't like that character because you're like, well, you're getting in the way of the story of the movie. And it's not that character's fault, it's how it's written. And for a while, both Grace Kelly and especially Thelma Ritter are the ones coming in telling Jimmy Stewart, knock it off, stop looking. I mean, in fact, she's, you know, you're looking at all the bathing beauties and all this stuff. And yet you don't resent her. Yet you love all those scenes because she's so funny. And she's just got, again, she brings in just such energy. And that scene where he's, you know, she gives him the massage and he's taking his thermometer, you know, he's checking his temperature and he's talking on and on about theories of marriage. And she's just not listening to him. All that stuff is just so wonderfully done.
And
And
plus, he's such a jerk to Grace
oh my
Kelly.
God, Jimmy
Are you
Stewart's
kidding?
such a dick in that movie to Grace Kelly. It's ridiculous. Was there any, did you, in your notes for your book, did you ever, was there anything as to why Hitchcock never used her? Again, she was in an episode of
Oh,
his
he
TV
did want
show.
to use her again. It's in the book. He did want to use her again, but she didn't want to do the part.
What was it?
I can't tell you because I'm saving it for the book. Don't be
Oh,
mad at me. Don't be
wow.
mad at me.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Now I'm thinking, well, what Hitchcock movie after Rear Window would she have been really good? Now I got to think about this. Now I got to like, all right, okay.
Okay. All right. If
Wow.
you guess, I'll tell you later.
Okay, I'll think about it. I'm like, well, not the mom in Psycho. That would be wrong. So, okay, I'll have to think about this. I will have to think about that's she's so I Rear Window just
Yeah.
man, and I have told you know what? I've told this story on the on this show before, so I apologize anybody who's heard it before. But last year, my wife and I went to see Rear Window in the theater. There's a theater, the Tampa Theater, where I've done some onstage
Are
intros
you in
of.
Tampa?
Yeah,
I used to live in Tampa.
we're right outside of Tampa. We're like an hour, well, like an hour outside of Tampa, but we went to the
I used
Tampa.
to live in Tampa.
That's amazing. That small world.
Davis Island.
What is it?
On Davis Island.
I want to know where that is. Where is that? Really? Where is Davis Island? We've been to a
Davis
lot
Island
of
was right
places.
by Tampa General Hospital.
Okay, we've never been there. Okay, we go to a lot of beaches. We've never been there, but we go to the Tampa Theater and they're showing Rear Window on a Wednesday night. And I am like, I'll see Rear Window on the big screen any chance I get. So we go, and I'm really thrilled that the theater, and it's a big theater, the Tampa Theater is a big theater,
Is
is.
that the old theater that's been with the,
Yes.
that's where I saw Gone with the Wind in 1968.
Wow, look at that great small world. That's about, we love that. We said I've done a bunch of onstage intros for repertoire films at the Tampa Theater. I really love it. The people there are
Really?
just great. I love it. And they're showing Rear Window, and we go, and the theater is probably three-fourths full on a Wednesday night. And I'm like, this is great. This is great that the film is drawing, a 70-year-old movie is drawing this many people on a Wednesday night, on a work night, to go see this movie. So anyway, the guy doing the intro asks people, anybody here not seen this movie? And a bunch of hands go up, including a young girl behind me, like a row behind me, who looked like she was in her like early 20s. And he's like, oh great, well I won't spoil anything, yada yada yada. So then the movie plays, and we get to that part where Grace Kelly has stolen the wedding ring, and she gestures. And Raymond Burr sees her and looks right in the camera because he's looking at Jimmy Stewart. And this young girl behind me literally gasped at that moment. And I was like, this is awesome. This movie is 70 years old, and look how well it still works, that a 20-year-old can be like, I was like, this is great. This is so it was really one of the great film going experiences to be able to kind of hear people react to it in a really unguarded way. It was just
Oh,
wonderful.
that's fabulous.
Yeah. And people laughed at every Thelma Ritter line, like roared at. So it's just great, great stuff. So yeah, Rear Window, man, that's does not age. Now I want to talk about the mating
Well,
scene.
let me say one
Oh
thing about
yeah.
Hitch, because he would tease Thelma.
Okay.
A lot of her directors would tease her because they loved her so much. They knew she could take it, and he teased her.
Oh, I'm guessing that like she, unlike some of the other relationships he's had with his actors, his female actors, she's probably not really putting up with his not like didn't take that to heart. Kind of could just roll with it because of who she was.
She said if he didn't like what you were doing, he looked like he was going to throw up.
Well, there you go. Okay. so I want to talk about the mating season. That's one of her less famous ones. What do you think of the mating season?
Like The Mating Season, but I what has grown on me more than that, and some funny stories from The Mating Season. The Model and the Marriage Broker, to me, she has so much screen time there. I think that's
That's
one
like
of her
her
best.
only real star, almost starring part at that point, right? In terms of how much she's in the movie.
Model and the Marriage Broker is great. There were problems with Miriam Hopkins, and let's see what else happened. Oh, when they were doing all the photos, the promotional photos. John Lund didn't want to do it. He was tired. He wanted to go home or something. Anyway, they were wanting him to kiss Jean Tierney. He goes, I'm too tired.
Oh,
I'm crying.
what? Now that's
What?
officially a spoiled person when you are saying out
Right.
loud the words, I'm too tired to kiss Jean
Yeah,
Tierney.
it was
What the
something
hell are
like
you
it was
talking
something like
about?
that. Yeah, it was like he was too tired. He wanted to go home or his feet hurt. I think that's what it was, his feet hurt.
Oh, Lord. What the holy hell are you talking about? Yeah, that's the kind of thing where if someone says that to you, you just pause and go, did you just hear yourself? Did you just hear yourself what
And
you just
he would,
said?
yeah, and they were always teasing Thelma, and he teased her a little bit. And he goes, if you go big with this, I'm gonna really get you, because he felt that she was, really gonna, I don't know, overwhelm him on screen or something like that. But he was teasing her. They were all teasing her.
Wow. There's the scene in the mating season that I really like is when she reveals to the old, I'm trying to remember exactly the situation of it, but they're back in the cab with the older guy, the wealthy guy, and she talks about that she didn't have a lot of money for Christmas presents, and she would, but she wanted her son to have something, and so she would knowingly write bad checks because the Czechs would be able to get Christmas presents. And then late, like she would sort of deal with it later on afterwards. Like the checks would obviously come due and it would become a problem. But she could kite some checks long enough to buy her son stuff for Christmas. And in a very silly movie, it's a lot of mistaken identity. It's a lot of Thelma's pretending to be somebody that she's not, and it's all very silly. But that scene has such wonderful gravitas to it, right? That she's
It does. It
admitting,
does.
you
Yes.
know, like I was so poor that I had to do this for my son, but I didn't want my son to know that we were poor. And it's this very kind of serious scene in the middle of this very silly movie. And I remember just thinking, wow, she's really crushing this. This is really great.
Well, one of the things she would do, I mean, she t when she was younger, she would perform for churches, Masonic lodges, etc. And she did something called The Story of Cremona. And it's about this violin, and it's kind of a sad, melodramatic story. She was very good at, pulling on your heartstrings. You just didn't get that much of an opportunity to always do that.
I should mention she was nominated for an Oscar for that, in Best Supporting Role for The Mating Season. So, I mean, other people did
Yeah.
notice her,
I
obviously.
think Leonard Maltin told me that that was his favorite Thelma movie, was The Mating Season.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, that's not one of the more famous ones, and I was happy to watch it because, again, I was unfamiliar with it. So, on the flip side of that, pick up on South Street,
Oh my God.
one of the great film noirs. She was nominated for an Oscar for that one as well. I mean, the line of dialogue that she gives, where she's basically saying, "I just want to have enough money to bury myself properly," is like one of the great film noir lines of all time. Of like, that's how dark this movie is. That's all she cares about is having enough money to bury herself. Like, wow. And I mean, that's just an absolutely marvelous movie, and she's great in it.
It is. And the sweet the late Christa Fuller, she was so sweet to me, told me a couple of stories. And one of the lines was, whenever director Sam Fuller would see Thelma, he go, "There's my girl."
Oh, this is making me so happy because there's so many we know we hear so many stories about, obviously. Most people, especially people who really watch movies, we envy these people's lives, right? Because it's
Right.
filled with fame and power and wealth. And, you know, they live. I mean, look at John Lund. I'm too tired to kiss Jean Tierney. Like,
Oh,
what a
yeah.
life, right? You want that life. Like, imagine saying that. Imagine leading such a gilded
Well, and
life.
he might have said that just, for levity. I don't know.
Even so, but even if you're 10% kidding. Just the idea that kissing Jean Tierney is like another day at the office, you know, that kind of thing. And we envy that life, and yet we hear lots of stories about people who are desperately unhappy, right? Even people with
Right.
unimaginable wealth and unimaginable fame and unimaginable success were driven by demons, or people around them weren't great, or whatever. So it's great to hear someone that I am such a fan of, like Thelma, just had a great time. I'm sure she had her ups and downs like anybody else in
Well,
life.
yeah, it was tough. It was there were some tough things happening, but boy, when she was out in LA, she was in Hollywood. She was out there by herself. She got treated royally. She really did.
that's
She got
that's so
invited
good.
to parties, and she didn't have a whole lot of money. She would stay at the Garden of Allah in the same place. I think one of the apartments close to the swimming pool. That's where she liked to be. And well, and so I mean, there were always people wanting to take her out to dinner. Joan Crawford wanted to start a Thelma Ritter fan club for her, and she was always trying to figure out how she could get Thelma in a movie with her, and I'm just going like, Joan Crawford, really? So yeah, she wanted to start a fan club for
And
Thelma.
Joan Crawford was super dedicated to her fan club, like literally was
Oh yes,
signing
of
stuff up
course.
until like the last couple of months of her life. So, man, she would have probably really been great to run a Thelma Ritter fan club. It would have been very
Right.
dedicated. My goodness.
Right.
Oh, that's I yeah, I love hearing all that. By the way, I meant to ask you this when we were kind of in the beginning part of the show. Your title, The title of the book, Hollywood's Favorite New Yorker. Where did that come from exactly? What is the sort of
That
meaning of
came
that?
from director Alexa Forman, who is a researcher at Turner Classic Movies, and she directed that excuse me, documentary about, excuse me, excuse me, Mary Astor.
Okay.
And so she gave me the title for that. So we have to congratulate and thank Alexa Forman. She was Robert Osborne's right-hand woman,
Wow.
and just, she's still, total font of Hollywood knowledge.
But what does that phrase mean? Does it mean like that she had a persona that a New York kind of persona, and that's what that was? It was like, we need that kind of thing. Get Thelma Ritter. Is that what that sort of meant?
I kind of think that's what that means. To
Okay.
me, she really was Hollywood's favorite New Yorker. Think about
Okay.
it.
Okay.
How many
Yeah.
New Yorkers are in all the movies back in the 40s and 50s? Who
Yeah. Oh, it's great to hear that she just had a good time. That makes me really, really happy.
She
So,
had a good time. I think she did.
oh, that's great. So, all right, we're jumping around. Let's the second time around. We mentioned this, the one with Juliet Prowse, who's in a small part, with Debbie Reynolds as the first female sheriff of this town. It's a very silly Western. It's very light, very frothy. It's like a lot of those Debbie Reynolds movies from that time. It's a little, I remember being a little long, like for kind of a light comedy. It's a little like, all right, maybe close to 2 hours. I don't know if it needs to be this long. But Thelma, as usual, great in it, and is a great contrast to Debbie Reynolds, because she's this sort of running this farm, and she hires Debbie to work for her. No lost classic, but better than I thought it was, and I did have fun watching it.
Cute. It's cute.
Yeah.
And Andy Griffith was in it because he was having a career slump then. But she became very good close friends with Debbie Reynolds.
Oh, did
And
she?
yes, she was good friends with Debbie Reynolds, and they were also in, excuse me, How the West Was Won.
Right. I mean, being in How the West Was Won, I mean, first of all, that movie's like 3.5 hours, and it features so many people. I imagine when you're doing a super production like that, you're kind of hoovering up lots of actors to be in it, because you have so many speaking parts, and it takes place over multiple generations. You've got Gregory Peck and the voice of Spencer Tracy and John Wayne and Jimmy Stewart and all these. I mean, just a huge, huge cast. But it's great to see Thelma in that, and again, in a not insignificant part. I saw that on the big screen a couple of years ago, and that it's
Oh, I love that on the, oh, it's great. It's great.
yeah
Yes.
it's really it's fun. It's fun to see.
Well,
And
she was I think she was staying at Lone Pine. I think it was Lone Pine then. Was that up at, it was in Colorado. Wherever she was staying when they were making that, she hated the restaurant because all they did was put too much gravy on everything.
That's what a life, right?
Yeah.
That just sounds fantastic. The Misfits, another big one, the
Oh,
final film of
God.
both Clark Gable and Marilyn Monroe. We have yet to cover it here on the show. Of course, it's the because we could do either one of them for the episode. But again, a big, big part, right? For that, like, she's in the majority of the film with those two Titanic stars. Now, what was it like for her? Did you dig up notes? But what was it like for her to work with John Huston? Because it's a John Huston movie.
She wasn't that crazy about Houston.
Okay.
Because there were drinking and partying, and he'd stay out all night and come in the next morning. He'd been up all night losing money and at the casinos, and she wasn't too fond of that, but
Okay.
she really I know that Eli Wallach really appreciate he really liked her and appreciated her. She was very close to Marilyn. She had been in, she was in All About Eve. And Marilyn
Right.
was also in As Young As You
As
Feel.
Young As You Feel, yeah, she's in both those, yeah.
And so she had Arthur, Marilyn had Arthur Miller write this part in for Thelma. She told him she wanted this part for Thelma.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow.
Lots of stories about, Now, Misfits, we need a whole nother show for the Misfits.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, I didn't know any of that. That's imagine that, right? Imagine having Arthur Miller wrote your part for this movie. That's pretty amazing stuff. That's beautiful. I can only imagine that for what we know of the stories of Marilyn, right? That she was trying so hard to kind of like get the reins on her life and obviously never quite could, that it must have been an interesting contrast to be friends with Thelma Ritter, someone who seems so grounded and stable.
Well, yeah, I've got a feeling she's kind of like a mothering kind of figure, and
Yeah.
she was, she was very fond of Marilyn, and if anybody would put Marilyn down, she would take up for her because, they were close, and there were, I've got a couple of nice little quotes in the book about
All right, wow. You really teasing me with this book. So
that.
another one of her final Oscar nominated role was in The Birdman of Alcatraz, playing Burt Lancaster's doting mother. In fact, a little too doting, because it's in a rare, I'd say, unsympathetic part for
Yeah,
Thelma. It
I think
starts
that's
nice at
the.
the beginning, and then she really becomes very possessive of the Birdman and kind of turns on him, and you're really like, wow, what's it's just you're not used to seeing Thelma in a role like that.
No, you're not. And I think that's the meanest and the angriest she ever is on screen. She's got this very dour, sour face, and like you said, she turns on her own son.
Yeah.
But
Because he gets
she,
married, he gets a, he does a he perform he gets a jailhouse marriage where he meets a woman on the outside and they get married. And of course, Thelma Ritter, as his mom, is sort of put out that it's like, well, I've been taking care of you all this time, and now who's this woman? And she's very cruel to Burt Lancaster in that movie. I mean, it's a very
yeah,
uncompromising
and
movie.
the real Birdman of Alcatraz. I mean that the you know it, the film is a fable about. Prison and all that kind of thing, and but it's just to me that's the angriest I see her on screen.
I she's great in it, but yeah, it was a little like I'm so used to her being so avuncular and sweet, and then she's very
Dour and
much, yeah.
cold and dour and very vindictive.
I really like her. I know I'm going to be repeating myself throughout this because it's just I loved her in everything, but like I really enjoyed her in A New Kind of Love, the Paul Newman, Joanne
Oh
Woodward
my gosh,
movie.
I think one of the best scenes in the whole movie is when she's talking about being lonely. I mean, I tear up every time I see that. And it's a fluffy, romantic sex romping kind of comedy that really, is dated. It's very dated. But you got to remember, what I love is that, she fights Ava Gabor for her man. Okay. And people forget that in many of the movies Thelma was in, she had a boyfriend or she had somebody that was interested in her romantic, even in Pillow Talk. Oh, Harry, the elevator guy. This is one of those aspects of she's an every woman, but yet she also has this universal appeal.
Yeah, it is very sweet, right? Because she has a thing for the boss of the and he's oblivious to it. He doesn't recognize that at all. And meanwhile, we're involved with all the shenanigans between Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward and stuff. But
And there are shenanigans,
there are definitely
yes.
shenanigans in that film. So it was fun to see Newman and Woodward in such a frothy kind of thing. And I think, is that the movie that I heard? I don't know. Maybe this was a different one, but there was one movie that the two of them did together that it got offered to them both, and Newman didn't want to do it. And Joanne Woodward got pissed because she's like, this is the first film I've been
Well,
offered where I
she
get to wear nice dresses and I look, and now you know when you don't want to do it. And so she kind of guilted
let
him
him,
into doing it.
she was letting him have it. Hey, I want to do this comedy and you're going to be in it or else.
I
Look at
want to
what
look
I've done for
pretty. I
you.
want to
I've
look
raised these kids.
fashionable.
And yeah, she went through all that.
Right. All right. I'm glad I got that. That's the right movie. That's very
Got
funny
that.
to me of
Got
her,
that.
like, you know, because she was a very serious actress. Joanne Woodward is always very, very serious. And so it's kind of fun that she's like, hey, I get to be fun and sexy and frothy, and you don't want to do it, you know?
Well,
So.
and two, that movie has so much in it. I mean, there's fashion, there's Ava Gabor being adorable. How can you, Thelma being adorable, and she ends up getting, Mr. Bergner. What can I say? And Joanne Woodward is adorable in this. Paul Newman is a total jerk. His part, I mean, his role, he's just such a sexist misogynist.
There's like some fantasy sequences in it that are a little
Yes.
like,
Oh, yeah, that's too
what?
funny.
Like, what?
Yeah, what is this?
Yeah. Like he plays football in one scene and you're like,
Yeah,
it
that's right.
doesn't
That's
quite fit with what you think of Paul Newman necessarily, but again, once again, Thelma Ritter, really great in it. I will say one movie of hers that I didn't like, and these are never her fault if the movies aren't very good because she's not the creative driver of it. I watched Boeing Boeing with Jerry Lewis and
Oh,
Tony
please.
Curtis, and that's just really, it's these two guys and they're having multiple affairs based on their flying schedules because they know that, well, this stewardess won't be in this city. And it's very modern and very, you know, oh, this is so scandalous. But I
And
just found the whole thing sleazy and kind of ugly.
it's Quentin, one of Quentin Tarantino's favorite films.
Okay.
What does this tell you?
Okay. Quentin
I
has a
think
lot of
he
very.
screened it somewhere, he screened it someplace, and it was one of his favorite films.
He has a lot of dubious for such a film genius. He has a lot of dubious opinions when it comes to movies. I mean, but yeah, I mean, and she again. I'm happy to see her. And when the movie's not great, I don't blame her because again, she's just a working actor. She's not the driver of the piece. But it is like I rolled my eyes a lot at that one.
Now, something that there's a trivia from this film. Evidently, when Jerry Lewis showed up in Paris, he had like at least one suitcase full of nothing but white socks. I don't know why that stuck in my mind.
Okay. Movie
Really?
stars. her last significant part is in this, before we get to What's So Bad About Feeling Good, is this small independent movie, really gritty New York subway piece called The Incident, about all these New Yorkers that end up on a subway car and they get sort of essentially taken hostage by a couple of criminals. And it's pretty kind of an ugly movie on
It
purpose.
is. It is.
How did she, do you know how she ended up in that? Because that's not like a, that wasn't like a big Hollywood production, I don't
Yeah,
think.
and there were financial problems with it too.
Okay.
I know that, but no, how she ended up, she was asked, she was, she, I believe it was, I think it was Larry Pierce, the director, maybe. I'm not sure about that. I do know that. I ran into Martin Sheen at the Turner Classic Film Festival when they screened The Incident with Beau Bridges,
Right, and he's in that. Right.
and I asked Martin Sheen a quick question about Thelma Ritter in the film because she's just she's wonderful, she's wonderful. Yeah, but yeah,
Yeah.
this is a very gritty, And Donna Mills was in that too. She just did a podcast and she talked about how great it was just to be in a film with Thelma Ritter.
Oh, that's great. Again, that's wonderful. So then the last film that she ended up appearing in, as I mentioned at the top, it's called What's So Bad About Feeling Good. It came out on May 24th, 1968, as I mentioned, stars George Peppard and Mary Tyler Moore. So I'm going to get very briefly into the plot. George Peppard is Pete, a former hard-charging ad executive who was tuned in and dropped out, living life as a bohemian in a commune in New York City, full of misanthropes waiting for the end of the world. A wayward toucan, you heard that right, which stowed away on a boat from South America, shows up at the commune and starts spreading a highly contagious virus that makes people feel happy and euphoric. The virus spreads, and Pete suddenly finds purpose in life, much to the shock of his girlfriend Liz, played by Mary Tyler Moore. The collective decides to go undercover and spreads the virus all over the city. When people become so happy that they stop buying drugs and alcohol, the government steps in to try and control the virus. As I mentioned, George Peppard and Mary Tyler Moore. Dom DeLuise is in this movie. John McMartin plays the New York mayor. Susan St. James in an early role. Don Stroud. And then we get a very brief cameo from Thelma Ritter, unbilled. She doesn't get any credit. She basically just has the one scene. There's a scene in a hospital where Mary Tyler Moore is trying to smuggle this toucan under her shirt as if she's pregnant. And Thelma Ritter is this nice, kindly old lady who talks about how she likes her new version of herself, this post-virus version. It's not a very famous movie. It's interesting to me that she can't. I'm guessing that she cameoed in this just as a favor to George Seton.
Yes, she did.
Okay.
Yes, George looked upon Thelma as a good luck charm.
Well, there you go. Makes sense.
Yeah, he did.
Now, what do you think of this movie? Because it's trying very hard to be modern and
Well, it's
hip.
kind of got that barefoot in the park kind of vibe, you know. I watched it a couple of times, and I thought, you know, it's a cute premise. And you got to think about what was going on in that movie played out during COVID.
That part is pretty startling, right? When you get to that part
Yeah,
that it's
yeah.
like, wow, it's about a virus that spreads through the city and everyone's wearing masks. You're like, whoa.
Yeah. You're going COVID,
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
only with a toucan. And there's an interesting family story about a toucan, evidently. Thelma and her husband went on a trip, and they left their son Tony in charge of the house. And they left him some money, I think. And I'm not sure exactly when this happened, but I think Tony was in his teens. But he went out and bought a toucan, and it tore up, tore the I don't know a wallpaper off the wall, and did all kinds of things in the house. Anyway, I'm just going. I thought that was such an odd story, but I think that happened before Thelma's last film.
Okay,
So.
yeah. It was, I mentioned, it was directed by George Seton. Now, he was written by him as well. Now, he was born in 1911, which means when this movie was made, he was 57. I'm only a couple of years away from that. And it is the kind of movie that I think
No.
it is a little like it's making fun of the hippies, and like in the opening, there's a scene in like a music club, and it's called like the Scum Pit, and the band is called the Maggots, and you're like, okay, all right, this does feel a little like a bunch of old people making fun of young kids. I mean, if someone said to me, hey Rob, you're in your mid-50s, can you make a movie about the TikTok generation? I'd be like, no, what the hell do I know about that? So it does have a little bit of like, all right, old man George Seton, you're kind of, what do you know about this? But at the same time, it is funny. It's goofy. I mean, the toucan literally gets like word balloons on screen.
I know. I mean, this is a new concept of something,
Yeah,
right?
it's very, very silly. But like when Dom DeLuise shows up and he's in like this Martian helmet, like that's funny. Like that's like it's a good visual gag, and it's all just very, very silly. But it is, it's trying. I did like the idea that the government steps in once they realize people aren't enjoying their vices anymore because they're happy, and that's got to be stopped. So I was like, okay, I liked a little bit of that social commentary in
Yeah,
there.
yeah.
So it's an unusual movie, and I will say, Mary Tyler Moore, she's in this movie. This was post Dick Van Dyke Show, but pre Mary Tyler Moore Show, and Hollywood didn't really know what to do with her. We just
Right.
talked about her a couple of months ago because she's in Elvis's last movie, Change of Habit, which we covered. So this is like her second appearance at a film where it's someone else's last film. She's like the Grim Reaper for people's careers. Hollywood just didn't know what to do with her in the late 60s. Like they just kept putting her in these movies and they kept flopping. And then I think she realized, I think I need to go back to television because she
Oh,
didn't
that's
do it
right.
after Change of Habit. She didn't do another movie for 11 years until she came back in Ordinary People. Now, did Thelma, obviously, not to get, I don't want to get grim about this, but like she died relatively young. She was in her late 60s. So she died, I'm guessing that this was, She had no intention of retiring. This was not something of like,
Oh
this is
no.
the end of my career. This is just a little
Yeah.
gag she was doing for her friend.
And the last, I think one thing that she really wanted to do before she got ill and passed away, but she wanted to play Ada Quonset in Airport. And that was also George's
George
film.
Seaton's next movie, which was a monster hit. That was a monster hit.
But
Interesting.
he went with Helen Hayes, who won the
Won
Oscar.
the Oscar for that. Well, that okay. That actually
What a
leads
burn. What a burn.
that lead that that leads perfectly into what my exit question for you was going to be. And we're talking about her last movie. Like I said, it's a nice bow on a career to be in a movie directed by George Seaton when she started
Right.
her career in a movie by George Seaton. It has a
That is.
wonderful, wonderful rise. George Lucas says it rhymes, but
I mean,
that
it's an art. It's a real life arc.
it really is. And again, she's really sweet in it. And I like her little scene where she's talking with the friend and the friend is like, you know, you've changed. And she's like, I like how I've changed. I like that I'm happy. I kind of like me post virus. And so it's really sweet to see her show up. And it's kind of fun that she's unbilled. You're like, if you know it and you watch the movie, you're like, whoa, what's Thelma Ritter in this movie? So, but that the whole thing about the airport and the Oscar, that leads perfectly to what I wanted to ask you as the exit question, which was, as I mentioned, Thelma Ritter got nominated for 6 Academy Awards. There's only a handful of people that could say that. 6. And she never won. So which film out of that 6, let's limit it to this those 6 for now. Out of that 6 films, which were, as I mentioned, Birdman of Alcatraz, Pillow Talk, Pickup on South Street with a Song in My Heart, The Mating Season, All About Eve, which one do you think she, you know, not to disparage whoever did win, but which one would you, as a Thelma Ritter expert, would you think she really should have won for?
Well, a lot of the ones she was nominated for were lighthearted. And you usually did not necessarily win an Academy Award back then
Right.
if you were in a comedy. And I think her best dramatic performance, of course, is Pickup on South Street.
Fair
So,
enough.
what do you think?
It's, I mean, of those 6,
Yeah, what would you pick?
I mean, I can't imagine giving her an Oscar for The Mating Season because the movie is so slight. But like I said, that scene of her in the cab is so wonderful. And it's really the heart of this piece in a lot of ways that, but yeah, I think I'd probably have to go with Pickup on South Street because she's just so, the movie's so grim and she's just so wonderfully, like, it's just so sad. You know, you're like, oh my God,
Yeah.
you know, but
Well, I
I
mean, you
mean,
know, I see makeup. I see the Mating Season. I see that too.
yeah.
But I mean, as far as the drama, I mean, you know,
Yeah.
golly, the end is just such a heartbreaker.
Well, then let me expand the question then a little bit as we're wrapping up here. What is there a movie of hers that she didn't get nominated for that you think, oh, why have they missed that one? I mean, my answer is Rear Window. When I looked up that she got six
Yeah, I would
nominations,
go
I
with
was like,
that.
well, of
Yeah.
course, Rear Window. I'm like, not Rear Window? That makes no
Yeah,
sense.
I would go with Through a Window, mainly because I just love it so much.
Yeah. Oh, it's
I
just
just think her
unbelievable.
character, I mean, when you give the woman the last line in the film,
Yeah.
come on. Yeah.
So good. Now I want to watch Rear Window again. So, well, Christy, I'm so thrilled that we got to do this. I cannot wait to read the book. I am just it's just the idea that there's going to be a whole book about a subject that for the longest time I thought like only I was interested in or whatever is just going to be so I'm really dying to pour into it. Where can people find you and or the book out on the internet? I know the book's not out yet and won't be for a little while, but where can people find you out on the internet if they want to just keep tabs on you or the
I'm
book?
Christy. Yeah, I'm. Well, I really appreciate it. I've enjoyed being here today too. I'm Christy Putnam on Facebook. I'm on Twitter and or the X, whatever. And I'm on. Oh
Blue
gosh, I'm on
sky.
Instagram. I'm on Blue Sky. That's where you found me, right? I can't
Yep,
remember.
that's right. That's right.
Yeah, and so yeah, I just keep posting off and on. I also have a Facebook page that's Thelma Ritter, Hollywood's favorite New Yorker. So I'll post things on there too. Little
Now,
snippet.
do you? Okay, you mentioned the writing of the book is done. It's the manuscript is into your publisher. Now you're doing the captions. Do you still actively pursue finding more stuff? Because I could see it'd be hard to turn that flip that switch. But then, do you want to find something new? Because the books are the manuscript's already done.
Well, I mean, it's being reviewed because they may send it back to me and say, we want you to fix this chapter and that chapter
Okay.
and do this or that or whatever. And but I find that yeah, it's just more stuff just keeps coming in here and there. And I've gotten some really great comments and tips through social media. And one thing that Thelma really loved was going to the beach.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they had a place up in Fire Island off of at Fair Harbor, and she was what Bob Merrill used to say. She was a real beachy kind of person, and she loved to. She taught one of her granddaughters how to find clams, and that she loved the beach.
That's great. Again, that's not, I think of her as such an urban figure. So I would
Yeah,
not
me
imagine
too.
she was
She
a
was
big beach person,
so
but
well dressed. People would see her, she would be complete. You should have this gorgeous suits on and things like that. And when you play a maid in the movie, nobody's expecting you to look fabulous in a Chanel suit, but you do.
Well, I'm very heartened to know that she had a good time, that she enjoyed herself and she knew she understood, she kind of had an understanding of like, wow, this is, I'm doing great. This is, I'm
Right.
doing good work. I'm appearing in great movies. And so, like I said, I am just so excited, to read this book. And I could, once I knew of your existence, I was like, there is no other get, I will not do the Thelma Ritter episode unless I can get Christy to do this, because I just no other guest would do it as well. So, thank you for doing this, Christy. Thank you for
Well,
all the
I really
work. 10 years
appreciate
of
it.
we're working on this book, for Pete's sakes. But thank you for doing the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm happy to meet such a great fan of Thelma Ritter.
Awesome. Like I said, I can't wait for the book. So, thank you everybody for listening. Go check out a bunch of Thelma Ritter movies if you haven't seen some. I know you probably have all seen Rear Window, but go check out some of the others. There's a lot of great stuff there. You can find all the back episodes of this web of this podcast on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. You can find the show on Blue Sky at Fade Out Pod. And if you want to support the Find Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcasts. There you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Monique D, Donald McWaters, Mark Balbus, plus David S. Gutierrez, Gord Tolton, Al the Comics Guy, and Mike Atchison for their support of this show and the Fine Water Podcast Network. I really appreciate it. So thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back with another episode next month, but we've reached the end of this particular script. So for now, it's time to fade out.
Look, Mr. Jeffries, I'm not an educated woman, but I can tell you one thing. When a man and a woman see each other and like each other, they ought to come together, wham, like a couple of taxis on Broadway, and not sit around analyzing each other like two specimens in a bottle.
There's an intelligent way to approach marriage.
Intelligence. Nothing has caused the human race so much trouble as intelligence. Modern marriage.
Now, we've progressed emotionally.
Baloney. Once it was see somebody, get excited, get married. Now it's read a lot of books, fence with a lot of four-syllable words, psychoanalyze each other until you can't tell the difference between a petting party and a civil service exam.
People have different emotional levels.
When I married Miles, we were both a couple of maladjusted misfits. We are still maladjusted misfits. And we have loved every minute of it.
Well, that's fine, Stella. Now, would you fix me a sandwich, please?
Yes, I will. And I'll spread a little common sense on the bread. Lise is loaded to her fingertips with love for you. I got two words of advice for you. Marry her.
She pay you much?
Oh.